Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sox are trying to move this game along. 3-2. Moncada takes. Called strike three. It was borderline. And it finishes off the Pirates' home opener with a win for the home team.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score.
Sure, Saturday Suckage. Might as well discuss the White Sox. First, I need to correct myself. A texter, thank you, 574 texter. It was just Pettit and Jeter who went to the mound, no Posada. And I thought he was there. Somebody had to be there. And I was wrong. But it was Pettit and Jeter and a whole lot of crying and whatever. Still, it's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful moment. Great idea by Joe Girardi. Who, one texter suggested, should be the Cubs manager now. Don't we have to judge David Ross? Like, he has to actually manage now? He can't just sort of shovel stuff and sort through the detritus that is dumped on him, right? Doesn't he have to actually manage? You know who also has to manage? Pedro Grifol. And that's really a shame because he sounds and acts so much like a rookie manager. That's what it looks like from here. What does it look like from being on in the locker room, in the dugout, in the clubhouse, in the dugout, in the press box as they play? We're going to go to the guest hotline, the Score hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. We will ask Scott Merkin of MLB.com, what does it look like from his view? Scott, thanks for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Sure. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing okay. So what do you think of Pedro Grifol?
Well, I like him, first of all. Genuinely good guy. He reminds me a little bit, like I said, I said this before, not on your show, but in demeanor, just kind of approach, a little like Ricky Renteria, which I think is a high compliment because I thought Ricky I know he still is a great man, and I thought he did a nice job as manager for the White Sox as well. So he reminds me in that aspect a little bit, but he's different. Everyone's different. You know, I said this in the beginning, you know, Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams talked about how in that first interview, he pretty much won the job. You know, he was that impressive that it was going to be tough for him not to get it, and he got it. He said a lot of good things, said a lot of right things during his press conference, during the offseason, during spring training, ran a camp that the players had input on, the players liked. And I'm not talking the players had input like, you know, they wanted nap time 2 hours a day. Like, you know, that would have been the beat writer's input, I think, if that was the case. But, you know, there was very little downtime. It was a very focused camp, and it's what the players wanted. They didn't want a lot of standing around. They wanted to get stuff done. But ultimately, what is he judged upon? It's results, right? Now, again, it's 8 games in of 162. As Rick Hahn said the other day, he met with the media after the first 4 games in Houston, and he said judging it then is like judging the first quarter of the first game of an NFL season. And really, it's probably more like the first play of the first quarter of the first game of an NFL season. So it's so early to judge, but he really is. I mean, you talk to people in the game who know him and who know baseball, and they love Pedro Grifol. So I think whatever you think or don't think about him, he has a plan. His staff has a plan as a group. They are working together. They are working in conjunction with the front office, with the players. And I think they're going to get this right. And I understand there's been some games that haven't looked so good, but it's also, you know, 8 games into a very long season.
Maybe it's just me and certain sensibilities having been around here for a while, one of the things a manager does, he represents, he gets the most face time. And right. Several things jump out at me when this screams rookie manager, and I don't want to hear it. And one is, well, we were a pitch or two away. He said that in Houston. We were a pitch or two away, a knock or two away, and the outcome is different. Yeah, if my Bubby had Batesum, she'd be my Zeta. And you think about that's what Wani said early when he was a rookie head coach. And then this week telling me that Hanser Alberto picked up the team when they were giving up double-digit runs again. That's so grasping. That's so – Sox fans know better. Don't tell Sox fans that. They know crap when they see it. They've lived through it. I don't know if he's been told that, if that's normally his way, or if that's what a manager trying to curry favor in a shaky dressing room, a dressing room that isn't fully together, if that's what he thinks he needs to say. That's really what bothers me. Is you're chipping away at credibility. What you brought up was excellent he said all the right things. He was like Jerry Manuel at Jerry Manuel's press conference, and this is, where has this guy been all our lives? And then he starts sounding like a rookie manager, and I don't know how that plays in the clubhouse. How does it play in the clubhouse?
Very well, from what I can tell so far. I think the thing with Hanser Alberto is, whatever you want to read into the comments, what he was saying is this guy, you know, became the first position player in franchise history to pitch twice in a three-game series. I'm not talking two innings. I'm talking two different games in a three-game series. And I think what Pedro is trying to say is this sets them up for other games. Now, he didn't envision probably Lucas Giolito going out and getting hit hard on Friday in Pittsburgh, but it sets them up where they don't have to use another reliever. You know, I mean, they can use him to get through the ninth, and whatever happens, which ended up in the second time around a grand slam, it happens. The game was over. It was a 12-3 game going into the ninth inning. It was a 16-3 game going into the bottom of the ninth inning. So that's what I think he meant. But the players respond to him. They really do. Now, I will say there was a number of players who responded to Tony La Russa. There's a number who responded to Ricky Renteria, Robin, Ozzy. You know, I mean, I think in the time I've covered the team since 2003, so I had 1 year, Jerry Manuel, Ozzy, Robin, Ricky, Tony, a little bit of Miguel Cairo, and then Pedro. I mean, I've never seen a manager who was disliked. I've never seen a manager where there was a mutiny in the clubhouse, which was a great movie, by the way, in the old days. But I've never seen that. I've seen that there are certain players who didn't get along with even the best of managers, right? That happens at times. But I think the players are responding to him. I think Pedro is just not going to be – I think he's very honest. I think he gives good answers. I think there are certain details he doesn't feel needs to be broadcast, you know, injury type things. I don't think he's going to go into huge detail until the details are out there. You're not going to get him to say, oh yeah, this is what happened, this is how it went down, until it's actually public what's going on. So I think he's focused on winning. He's focused on building. You know, he talked a lot about culture in his press conference. He talked a lot about, when I talked to him one-on-one in the offseason, I remember I did a whole story about that, about him talking about that. And then he talked a lot about that during spring training. Now you're more into the nuts and bolts and baseball is going on, but I'm sure that's still there for him. So I would say, from what I've seen, the players really enjoy playing for him. And, you know, it's eight games, and it's easy to say, you know, Yoan Moncada, Tim Anderson, and Luis Robert are MVP candidates, and the starting pitching is horrible. But, you know, at 35 games, the hitters may still be going strong, and the pitching may have come back. We've seen things turn around real quickly. So I think you can look at this and say, okay, mark this down as a trend, maybe 50 or 60 games in, but not so much eight games. And, you know, I mean, you think about it, Giolito's had a decent start and then a bad start. Same for Lance Lynn. If they go three good starts in a row, their ERAs, their numbers look considerably better. It's all the start of this. It's like, you know, you go 0 for 20 at the start of the season, it's very glaring, right? You go 0 for 20 with 200 at-bats, people say, oh, yeah, he's slumping a little bit, and that's about it.
My guest is Scott Merkin, and he covers the White Sox for MLB.com. We're talking White Sox baseball here on The Score, Chicago Sports Radio 670. So I need them to pick a lane. Is it Fat Lance or Slimmer Geo? I mean, which one? One of them has to be right. You can't have both of them suck. We need a body type here. I expected more from Giolito. Lance Lynn looks like the guy who's Lance Lynn, and eventually he's going to be that guy who just, it's somehow that body type is just going to lead to bad things. But I thought Giolito is doing the right thing after last year's experiment, and it didn't go well, and he's back to looking like that, the kind of rangy guy, and it's not here. And I don't know, you seem to be pretty confident it'll get there. So why?
Yeah, I think, you know, the whole staff, aside from Dylan Cease, and then Clevinger makes his second start today, but he just had the one start and looked pretty solid against Houston for five innings. The other three guys, Cease was unreal in his opener against Houston and then pitched like an ace without his best stuff, although he also, you know, had a cold. He said that, or Pedro talked about that. Dylan didn't play it up as much when we talked to him postgame, but wasn't at 100%, let's put it that way, in the one game they won against the Giants. But, you know, Kopech struggled, gave up five home runs, four in one inning. Lynn struggled. Giolito struggled. Giolito and Lynn had decent starts against Houston. I just think, you know, Lucas knows what he's doing. Lucas is a guy who's a student of the game as much as just a pitcher. So I think he'll work tirelessly to make the adjustments. Now, his velocity is a little kind of up and down in the first couple starts, but he even talked about it in spring training, and he had, you know, pretty good success in spring training, which, again, doesn't mean anything aside from that you're getting good preparation in. But he said he's not as worried about that anymore because he feels like, you know, he's able to adjust better. He liked the shape of his pitches, the way the pitches were moving. So, again, you're allowed. You can certainly make the judgment whatever you want. I would wait, like, you know, 9, 10, 11 starts in before you start seeing anything. Lynn last year had a horrible stretch when he came back from the injury, and it was because he, you know, needed to kind of ramp himself back up. I think 7 or 8 starts in, he had an ERA around 7, and then the rest of the year, which was probably another 15, 20 starts, I don't have it right in front of me, but his ERA was below 3. So Lance knows what he's doing out there. You know, Lance had a real bad game. You know, it's not so much tipping pitches as they're just giving hittable pitches to these guys. I mean, you look at some of the pitches to the Giants, and there's a reason these home runs were going 400 feet. You know, they were right there for them to hit, and a lot was the same in Pittsburgh yesterday too. So, again, I just think it's too early. I understand your concern. Lucas had a bad year last year, but he had 3 good years before that. So there is history there. There is ability there. And I think you got to wait and see, you know, 9, 10 starts. The other issue for the White Sox is, you know, I don't know how many teams in baseball, maybe the Padres or, you know, who have more than like 6, 7 starters that you can turn to. But aside from Davis Martin behind them, there really isn't a lot of depth in that starting, in the system starting wise. You have Sean Burke, but he was dealing with a little bit of soreness to start the year. And he was still a little ways anyways. So, you know, he's one of their prospects, one of their top 10 prospects, according to our MLB pipeline. But these are the guys you're riding with. So you got to trust them and you got to let them work it out. And I know how hard they work. I know the detail that Ethan Katz and Kurt Hassler put into it. And I say, you know, at least wait 10 to 12 starts before you really make judgments.
Sorry, no. I have a microwave mentality. It's like, oh, my God, that was a bad inning. It's all is lost. That's the way it's
going. So what do you
go.
Do if, like, the next 3 starts, Giolito throws 21 innings and allows 2 earned runs? Then he's back, you think?
Oh, my God, we're throwing a parade. We're throwing a parade for him.
And then in the 4th start, he gets hit. You're gonna give yourself a migraine by start 10 this year, I think.
Well, you know what? Everything's content. That's all I can say, Scott.
I gotcha.
That's the way it goes. Speaking of content, when you Steve Stone made his major league debut today in 1971. Yeah. So you go find him. He faced the Padres. He did not last very long. It was 3 innings. He did not have Hanser Alberto to pick him up. He gave up 4 runs. One of them was a home run. So that was against the starter for the Giants, 1971. And eventually he would win a Cy Young. So there's your progress, right?
One of the top analysts in the game now. Cy Young winner to All-Star, top analyst in the game. You know, I don't know if you remember this, but when I was kind of growing up, when a position player went in the game, it was kind of a big thing, right? It was kind of like a cool thing. You're like, holy cow, the short. I remember like when Adam Dunn pitched, it was a big to-do. Adam LaRoche pitched, it was big. Now it's just kind of like, okay, it means someone's winning big or someone's losing big, pretty much. And that's it. And again, it meant that way back in the day, too, you know, unless you just played 18 innings and ran out of pitchers for some reason. But now it's more a rule than it is like an event, I think, in terms of position players going in there.
You know what it used to be? I mean, way back, and starting to sound like Hawk Harrelson in my time zone, What happened was you had four starters in your rotation. Everybody in the bullpen was a failed starter, and the manager was left to mix and match.
Right.
And only did it only seemed like in the mid-60s where Phil Regan got the name the Vulture is because the Dodgers would keep it close, and Koufax gave him the name the Vulture because he'd swoop in and get a victory back when people thought pitcher victories meant something when it would, a 1-1 game would be broken late. But he was a failed starter, and they bring him in. Ron Perinosky in that Dodger bullpen. Joe Moeller. They were all failed starters. It was a four-man rotation. And if you didn't go nine, you weren't. Hell, a famous game, Marshall and Warren Spahn. We each went 16 innings. I mean, that's four times the outing for most pitchers, most starters these days.
You know, it'd be interesting to talk to starters, and I really didn't ask them this during spring training. And I know they've talked about it in the past, but is 200 innings still the benchmark for starters? That used to be, you know, Mark Burley did that in his sleep pretty much, right? I mean, you penciled him every year. What do you have, 15 straight years with 199 innings, at least 30 starts and double-digit wins, and 14 straight with 200 innings pitched. I think he missed by two-thirds of an inning at the final season of his career. So is that, which I think is why Mark was so unappreciated besides of a litany of other statistics you can throw out there. But is that still even the thing for starters now? Do they look at 200 and say, you know, Dylan Cease had a remarkable season last year. I mean, was just a breakout. You know, if Verlander wasn't in that league, he's the Cy Young winner, most likely. And I think he threw 184 innings last year. So is 200 even a thing for starters anymore, or do they just go out there and say, let's, you know, I know they've all talked, because they haven't gone to this level, that you got to go at least six. That's the goal for the starter, or else you're screwing up the team. And they've been very honest about that. Lance has said that, Lucas has said that, Kopech and Cease has said that. They've all talked about that. So it's interesting where the benchmark has moved out, because the game is obviously different, and now there's bullpen specialization pretty much from the sixth inning on down, right?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you brought up Dylan Cease, and before I let you go, I want to ask, does he attribute most of his success to the porn mustache? His porn stash has signaled a break. Jay Kuda, who does wonderful work, wonderful statistical work, and Jay had pointed out the porn stash cut line, the difference in And has Dylan talked about what the porn stash has meant to him and how the porn stash should win the Cy Young and not him?
In deference to Dylan, I don't think he refers to it as a porn stash. But I did do a story, I believe we were in Texas last year, and I wrote on an off day about the mustache and the success he's found. And he still tipped his hat and gave the top mustache to Spencer Strider, the kid for Atlanta.
Yeah.
He said he still, you know, he was working at it, but he said it was still Spencer Strider was number one last year. So he does recognize it. Dylan's a great character of the game and really has a bunch of eclectic interests and is a fun guy to talk to. Besides the fact that he's got probably, you know, one of the top two or three sliders in the game to go along with everything else that he has going on.
And that porn stash, I mean, don't lean into it. Just tell him to lean into it, Scott. All right. Thanks for
bring it up to him the next time I see him. For
yeah,
sure. I'm sure he'll love that.
And wish Stoney well on his major league debut anniversary, 1971. So
sounds good.
Thanks. Appreciate your time, Scott. Thanks.
Okay, Steve. Take care.
Scott Merkin, MLB.com. He covers the White Sox. And we tried to have some fun with the miserable looking starting staff of one Reinsdorf team. So we're going to now look at the other one, and they made the pity party. We'll talk to Cody Westerlund about what this means and why, and are you going to make us watch? Do we have to care? Or can Cody watch so we don't have to? Isn't that Cody's job? Cody Westerlund is next, talking Bulls on the Score. Saturday Suckage, Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the Score.
Lawson forces up a left side three. Air ball! Saved and played by the Dallas Mavericks to the right corner. Jumper hit the side of the backboard. No good. And the ball game is over as McKinley Wright got it with an off-balance J in the far corner and his release. And that ball hit the right side of the backboard. And the ball game is over. And the Bulls escape with a 115-112 win.
Tanking like it ought to be. Dallas Mavericks. We're going to put all the worst players out there, and we're going to say, throw the ball into the rafters. See if you can hit all of our championship banner. Welcome and welcome back. Saturday Suckage, and nothing says suckage like the NBA's pity party. It is the play-in. My next guest tweeted this out Tuesday. It's so well done. I'm going to bring this back. What's most likely at stake in Bulls-Hawks? The right to host the same foe in a do-or-die game in 8 days in own house? To get into a do-or-die road game in Toronto or Miami that will give the winner the right to the gentlemen's to get gentlemen swept by Bucks? Catch the play-in fever. Well done, Cody Westerlund. Well done. Now you have to watch Wednesday's game so I don't have to, okay?
I guess I have to issue a retraction, Rosie, because the Hawks climbed past that nine spot, so they actually achieved a little bit more with their final results than that tweet indicated what was at stake.
You know what?
I apologize for the error.
You captured the spirit of the thing, basketball Dickie Dunn, and that's what matters. Cody Westerlund, he covers the Bulls for The Score. He joins me on The Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. So the Bulls have a date for the pity party on Wednesday in Toronto. And I just, there's all kinds of things that can go wrong, but what's really troubling and has been, you've seen so much of this, at one time they couldn't finish, then they couldn't start. They've had unprepared or unprofessional in starting games where they just get smacked around in the first quarter. Like, this is your job. Do this. And maybe it's the players, or maybe it's the coach who doesn't know how to prepare them. At this point, Billy Donovan's greatest characteristic is that he's not Jim Boylan. And yet here they are playing a Toronto team that's long but sucks offensively. They can't shoot. So there's a chance. Now I feel like Dumb and Dumber. So you're saying there's a chance. I don't know. What do you make of all this, Cody?
I expect a really slow-paced, grimy game on Wednesday when the Bulls visit the Raptors. I mean, you hit it on the head. That team can't shoot. They're one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the NBA. The Bulls are the least three-point volume shooting team in the NBA. I expect it. I mean, they've only had one matchup in kind of the current iterations of their team. And by that, I mean Patrick Beverley being in Chicago and giving them a little bit of a spark there in the final quarter of the season or so. And that game was really grinded out in Toronto. They won 104-98. And like Billy Donovan said, like you mentioned, that length affects the Bulls. The Bulls have been a good defensive rebounding team over the course of 81 games, but when it has gone wrong in the bad matchups, it goes really wrong, and the Raptors are one of those bad matchups for the Bulls on the boards because they have so much length at every position. Their guards will crash. The Bulls' guards haven't done enough to help support Vooch there. So, I mean, that's what you're going to get when you pit the 9th and 10th best teams in the East against each other. Like, I would expect a close game. The Bulls, you mentioned the starts. You mentioned, is it on Billy? Is it on the players? I hedge a little bit more toward the players on that because, like, some games they do start well, then they don't. Like, I just think their lack of focus and intensity at the start of games needs to fall on those on the floor more than it falls on any sort of game plan in that situation. So we'll see what the Bulls are made of. Like, we're going to see how much they care, right, Rosie? Like, I mean, they've talked about making the playoffs. They've talked about caring about the play-in here late in the season. Well, we're going to see how much they care when they get out there on Wednesday.
Yeah, I like to think that. I lean toward what you said, that the day of the game preparation has always been on the players, whatever the sport. Are they being prepared enough? Do they look like they know what the opponent's going to do? Do they look like they've been, it's been communicated so they understand it? And they just look so, whether it's lethargic or incompetent, and I don't, that's why I brought up the coaching. I think you're right, this team does an awful lot of talking, more than it does backing it up. And we heard that Patrick Beverley became a perfect Bull in my world. That he came here talking big and like, well, what's happened recently? He's still here, right? And all the talk was, hey, Zach's going to shoot. We love Zach. Yeah, he's going to shoot. He's going to do this. He's going to do. And there's such a short shelf life for all of the talk, and then nothing comes of it. And here they are, the 10th seed. maybe you hear more. I'm sure you hear more than me. What do you make of that kind of, I mean, talk versus action?
Well, I trace a lot of it to they got to say something, right? Like, and we got to talk about something on the airwaves. And Zach LaVine, when they lost to the Hawks on Tuesday night in that game that had mild playing implications, whatever you want to say. It was not the biggest game in the history of the world, but there was still some meaning attached to it last Tuesday. He said the Hawks just wanted it more. And you sit there and you go, like, that's a really damning quote.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also look at it like, he's got to say something. And other than we stink at shooting and I didn't have it early enough in this game and other guys got out of rhythm, like, we're just bad half the time. Like, I don't think he wants to say we're bad half the time because we're not well constructed and X, Y, and Z in this locker room have weaknesses here. So he says things like they wanted it more than us because that spreads the blame out. And that's what the Bulls like to do. That's what Billy Donovan's best at, right? Like, he will talk about the problems, identify the problems, and he will cast them in a net of the entire team having those problems, which is true. But he's usually never going to blow up any one player. So then we discuss it, and we talk about a new guy comes in, and then he realizes, Patrick Beverley, hey, even though I'm here and the Bulls got off to a good start, yep, there's still a lot of holes on this roster, and everyone keeps talking. And at the end of the year, it's just all going to come back to roster construction and what they do in the offseason, which is why we're going to go kind of into this 9-10 game, honestly, as hostages who need to watch it, but we're scared what's going to happen.
But we'll feed you. The games in Toronto, the Bulls' three-game series with the Raptors was home affairs. The Bulls won the game in Chicago, and the two games in Toronto, the Raptors won. And you mentioned, rightly so, the various iterations. The first time they played up there, Zach LaVine really wasn't part of it. He was still trying to work himself back. And then the last time Patrick Beverley was with them, the current iteration, they went up there. And one of the things you found out about the Raptors could miss a Siakam and beat the Bulls. And the Bulls lost games this week without Trae Young playing against them, without Giannis playing against them. Middleton wasn't in that game either. And so the Bulls are certainly capable of losing to bad teams. The one thing about this team, evaluate it, maybe it isn't as much of a problem as I remember it. With Toronto's length, it's not just offensive boards that they crash the board, they get them there, but it's the turnovers they create. And one of the problems that the Bulls had most notably in a game against Toronto was they were going to 20, 30, 40, it looked like a tote board by the time they were done turning over the ball. So what have you seen that either eases your mind that it's improved in the Bulls' ball handling, or that, watch out, Toronto is just going to knock away everything in any passing lane this Wednesday?
Yeah, I mean, the Raptors are first in the NBA in deflections here in the second half of the season or final quarter of the season among the NBA leaders. So you nailed that. I think if there's one, I guess, area of hope for the Bulls is that Patrick Beverley, for his shortcomings on the offensive end, right? He's not by any means an explosive player. Teams are leaving him wide open from three-point range. And sometimes he knocks him down, and it looks like it's a good bargain for the Bulls when he goes 2-for-5. But teams clog the lane up so much that they're okay with giving up a 2-for-5 from three-point range, for example, on him. The one thing he does do pretty well, though, even when he's not shooting, he takes care of the ball. So I do think part of that is, in a playoff setting, DeMar DeRozan is happy to slow it down, right? Like, he's extremely methodical. Patrick Beverley is pretty good at taking care of the basketball. And I think when you do that and you let Zach LaVine cut a little bit more, shoot a little bit more off screens and movement, and it's not like the ball's in Zach's hand every time. Like, if you're going to have Zach LaVine do high pick and roll against the Raptors for 30 or 40 possessions, he's going to turn the ball over a lot. But that's not what the Bulls are going to ask him to do in this game. So I think that's where the Bulls can mitigate it. There should be some hope there. Now, on the glass that you brought up, that would be more concerning to me, just because this Bulls team has been so undersized. And Billy Donovan, he has not liked how his guards have boxed out and rebounded for some long stretches here in recent weeks. So I think those are probably the things to watch. And I do want to point this out. I would expect Nick Nurse and the Raptors to flood defenders at DeMar and Zach like they have pretty much in every matchup, and make Alex Caruso, make Patrick Beverley try to beat him. But then the trickle-down effect of that is Kobe White and Pat Williams off the bench are much better probably at taking advantage of that than Caruso and Beverley on the offensive end. So I really think this matchup could come down to, does Kobe White knock down three-pointers? Can Pat Williams get out there and score 15, 18 points efficiently?
Cody Wessler is my guest. He covers the Bulls for The Score. That's what we're talking about, the Bulls on The Score here on Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio 670. Wouldn't you have to start Patrick Williams given your the way Toronto hits the offensive boards?
Billy loves that starting lineup of Caruso, Beverly, DeRozan, Vooch, and LaVine when it's healthy, though. Like he loves Caruso and Beverly being on the court at the same time, because if you look at a lot of those defensive metrics, when they're both out there, they've been really strong. And then when there's only one of those two out there, the Bulls' defense, which has kind of been a calling card for them this year, again, over the course of 82 games, 81 games, when you look at the big picture, it takes a dip when they're not both out there. But yes, I would expect, given that Pat Williams played a solid game last night, given he has the physical tools, and given, I mean, I think he needs the experience in this environment too. I would lean on him. And Billy has closed with Pat Williams when he's played well here in the past month or so. I know injuries are involved there, so he has relied on him more. I don't know if I'd go as far as Billy changing the starting lineup in that game, but I would hope that he gives Pat Williams plenty of opportunity.
When you mentioned that Nick Nurse floods, I mean, they just surround DeMar DeRozan. We're going to dare anybody else to beat us. And I don't know that they're fully capable of doing that with both DeRozan and LaVine if they're on the court. And the Raptors seem to have to pick one of them. It created in my mind, the as good as they might be defensively, Toronto, created in my mind the opportunity for Zach LaVine to look here. Earn, and I know it's not earning your $215 million, but give us hope that you could earn it at some point. If they are going to challenge Patrick Beverley to just deliver the ball anywhere, and they're going to take away DeRozan because they have such respect for him, especially up there, then this is Zach LaVine. This is a good prove-it platform for him, I think. Don't you think that opportunity gets created? I don't know how you flood both guys. How do you make sure both guys are shut down if they're both on the court?
Yeah, no, you raise an excellent point. That's very difficult. So to act like they can send two at both those guys every possession is not going to be the case. So, I mean, I agree with you there, Rosie, right? Like those first two matchups of the year, Zach sat out one of them with the knee management, played in the other one, was nothing like he is now. Obviously, only had 17 points on 6-12 field goals in that third matchup. I'm looking at the box score right here, but like it is an opportunity for him to ascend and rise to the occasion. Like he is the prototypical basketball player. Again, we expect this to be fairly close, a grinded out type of game, and DeMar DeRozan being the guy that scores 25 points on 12 of 26 shooting in that type of game plays into the Raptors' hands, right? Like there is no ceiling there for where DeMar explodes probably in this game. There still is for Zach because of his ability to shoot threes, because of his suddenness to get to the rim. And like, say what you want about Zach LaVine, he's still one of the top three or four players in the NBA with the ability to go on a personal 7 or 8-0 run in 50 seconds himself. Like that is in him at all times. And it feels like the Bulls will need some of those stretches from him against the Raptors to win this game on the road. So, yes, I'm with you. It's a big moment for him, even though we're always got to remember this is in the context of a playing game. I do think it is a big moment for him.
I know it is a pity party, but you bring up the 50-second personal 8-0 run, which is an excellent point, Cody. Could he do that if it were the last 50 seconds of the game? Do you trust him to do that if it were the last 50 seconds of a game?
I would need to see the matchups. That's a loaded topic. Right?
Yes, it like, is. That's it, why we're here on Talk Radio, Cody.
If there's 24 seconds on the shot clock and the Bulls got plenty of time, I would probably start initiating the offense through DeRozan if they're down 1 point or tied. Now, if it's more of a sudden type situation, I think I'd go with Zach. Like it very, very a lot of layers there. But yes, we can break them down. very, very much like to see what the situation is. And that's a topic that we could probably spend an hour on.
Okay, well, if you're going to demand context, I'm not here for that. I'm just
Okay, if you want me to cast a vote, you know, I got to cast it for one of them. I would like to see Zach get the ball in a tie game or the Bulls down one on Wednesday late in the game. That would be fun.
I would like to see that, too. I want to see that. I don't know if that's the way it goes. Oh, as long as you're casting a vote, we have a web poll.
Okay.
And we have a web poll, and I know that it'll be close to your heart. My rap name. That's what we're voting on. The reigning champion is Dr. Dreidel. That's one of them. And this week's challenger is Post Shalom. So Caesar's going to give it. You vote, and then Caesar will give us an update on who's leading whom in that. Dr. Dreidel or Post Shalom is my rap name.
I would probably lean Post Shalom, I guess.
Okay. All right. So where does he stand? What is he with, the majority or minority there, Caesar?
Yes, Post Shalom's holding strong. Now it's back up to a 70, clear over 70%, while the reigning champion, Dr. Oh, and we just had a change right in front of my eyes, and we're now down to 65% for Post Shalom, and Dr. Dreidel's up to 35%.
Okay, all right. Well, you had the right, your right call, Cody, so who are you picking Wednesday? As long as you're making right calls in yeah. Rap name polls.
I'll take Raptors by 4 if you're asking for a prediction.
All right. Cody, thanks for spending time today. I appreciate you coming on. Thank
you. All right, you guys take care.
Cody Westerlund, he covers the Bulls for the Score and just a fount of knowledge. Love talking hoops with him. And he watches Wednesday's pity party game, so you don't have to. And we had he had mentioned in his text, Cody did, the opportunity to get gentlemen swept by the Bucks. Eventually, at the end of this, somebody is going to come out and play the Bucks because they finished first overall. And a texter, 802 texter, what is gentleman's sweep? I've not heard that. Now all of a sudden I've heard it twice. Gentleman's sweep is this. It's a 5-game series. You're going to get one pity, you know, one mercy victory like the Bulls did last year. And basically they're going to get swept as soon as the Bucks care at the start. Or at the finish, whenever it is, they're going to care 4 out of 5 games. But one game, you're going to, that's your lovely parting gift. That's your pity party gift. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Marcus Stroman, it's pretty cool. It wasn't just his pitching. Again, it wasn't just six innings of shutout ball after 6 innings of shutout ball before. But he's done a pretty cool thing. And you can buy this. And there's another one coming out in July. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
So last I looked, Tiger Woods, Dustin Johnson, Charles Schwartzel. That'd be a pretty good leaderboard, right? Well, those are the last 3 names of the Masters. Wow. At Tiger at plus 4 overall, plus 1 today through 1? No, it's got to be more than that. Well, there you go. That's all that matters. Whoever's in first doesn't matter. Whoever's in second doesn't matter. It's Tiger. What is he going to do? When's he going to put on the Tiger charge? Coverage of the Masters on the Scores presented by the BMW Championship, hosted at Olympia Fields Country Club this August. I have a broadcast note, too, by the way. Broadcast note for a Score doubleheader tomorrow. Coming up tomorrow, this Chicago Sports doubleheader. First, starting at 11:45 on News Radio 780 WBBM, you'll be able to hear Bulls versus Pistons from the United Center. Then right here on the Score, 670 the Score and the Odyssey app, it's Cubs, Rangers, and the series finale from Wrigley Field. 2 games, great action right here in Chicago. We are Chicago Sports Radio, 670 Score. And I think, speaking of the Cubs, yesterday, Marcus Stroman goes out. 6 shutout innings in his second start, just like his first start. 6 shutout innings. And I thought this was cool. And I thought he'd written a book. Well, it turns out Marcus Stroman has written 2 books. It's a series. I don't know if you're aware of this. Your kids should be. In a The book that is that has been published, it's called The Grip. And it's semi-autobiographical. It's a middle grade series from Marcus Stroman. A young baseball player learns that perfect games only come with a lot of practice and some strikeouts. So this is the description of the book that you might purchase. Hardcover is $16.99. Marcus Stroman, The Grip. Young Marcus Stroman is determined to make it to the highest playing level he can, despite every coach telling him he's not tall enough to become a real pitcher. He'll show them, with some struggling and a whole lot of learning. It's easy to forget that every professional sports player, there was a kid just learning that sport, dealing with nerves during tryouts, dropping the ball when all their teammates are counting on them, learning how to stay friends with someone who doesn't make the team. These hard lessons are universal, whether in the majors or on a school playing field, and so are teamwork, competition, and believing in yourself. Hardcover $16.19, Kindle $10.99, paperback $8.99. So Marcus Stroman wrote a book. I thought that was pretty cool. It was called The Grip. It still is called The Grip. And then I see this. There is a second in this series. This one will be called The Spin. It will be released on July 11th this year. Could be right around the All-Star game. Now that would be some advertising for Marcus Stroman. In his second book, in this semi-autobiographical middle grade series from MLB, Marcus Stroman, young Marcus, continues to learn hard lessons on and off the baseball field. I love this. A 309 texter says, my son and I are currently reading it. It's great. So how old is your son? 309 texture. You're listening. You'll text me back. Anyways, the second version is The Spin. Although it looked like you look at the cover of this, it looks like it might be basketball, like he's playing different sports, different seasons. But I love this. I love Marcus Stroman writing this. And as it's called semi-autobiographical, you're going to be able to read into it what fears, the insecurities, the really good example for your kids. This is what all these people you see on TV that you think are idols and bulletproof and they do this for a living, and boy, Marcus Stroman certainly looked like that in his first two starts this year. I love the idea that this is the way it's going. 309 text 9. See, there you go. That's perfect. It's middle school stuff. Middle grade series. Marcus Stroman's writing this book. And 309 texture, I feel like it makes me think about how I interact and push him as a man and athlete as well. That is a really good point. And I think Marcus Stroman seems like he's addressing this in what I love this idea. I think it's terrific. And if you're a Cub fan, if you're the father, mother, if you're a grandfather, grandmother, you want to give you got a young man, a 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old. I think it's a wonderful, there are probably wonderful lessons in there. I remember years ago, Sean Gale had written a young person series, young adult, not young adult, they wouldn't have been adults, but young person series, middle grade stuff, grade school stuff, and really good lessons. And I think it's wonderful. This guy's, and that he has written a second book, and it's going to come out right around the All-Star game, and this guy's pitching like an All-Star. You go. Yeah, you go, Stro. That's the way it should be. I'm going to take a break. When I come back, by the way, do we have an update on our web poll? Dr. Dreidel versus Post Shalom Caesar, do we have an update? We go to 670 The Score, our Twitter machine that David Ross won't go to. He doesn't go to the Twitter machine or Google himself. And let that be a lesson to you.
65%, and Dr. Dreidel dipping just below 35% at 34.7 now.
Okay. Post Shalom. Look at that. Looking for an upset here. Dr. Dreidel's been Dr. Dreidel's been strong for the last month and a half or so, but here's Post Shalom. And now I got a texter mad at me. Well, Post Shalom is more of a pop singer. Dr. Dreidel's a rapper. I'm looking for a rap name. Okay. All right. You know what? You and your OCD need to maybe ratchet it down a bit. Mark Grody's coming up next. Mark Grody's going to talk Bears, my friend, and what they do, what they're going to do. Mark Grody hosts, creates On the Clock. It's a regular series leading up to the draft. It's even more interesting. So I have an important question to ask him about the Bears, my friend. Mark Grody, next on Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.